Good morning. Happy Thursday. It's time for Crossing Broadcast, your favorite Philly sports podcast. And as I said on Tuesday, it's not yet. It sure as shit should be, or at least it will be soon. And I thought, hey, it's Thursday, time for a guest. And as you probably have seen on social, Mike Garofalo, interview with King Gear coming up at the end of the show. It'll be coming up a little bit later. And that's good stuff. All about the NFL offseason, about the Eagles, a lot of stuff. Local ties, all great stuff. But before we get there, I'm bringing in a guy who I've had on another show before, and I might have on another show at some point down the road. A guy that you like to hear, and a guy that now has been gracing the airwaves with the dulcet tones of his voice, and that's none other than Broads. How you doing, fella?
What's up, dude? What's going on? I can't wait. We got a lot to discuss here. I don't know if you wanted to kick things off with Sting's final match or how we wanted to approach this.
Seek and Destroy. I was like, you know what? If it weren't for a DMCA takedown, we would have started with Seek and Destroy today. A little Metallica in the morning.
Yeah, maybe that would have been nice.
Maybe we'll get there. I've been told that you're like back in on the wrestling thing. So,
AEW got me sucked right back in. I bought WWE 2K24. So here's Broads all padded up in the ring as the WWE champion right now. Not going to
Wow.
Play,
but,
oh, yeah.
All right. All right. Look at you.
That's right.
Hey, listen. Nothing big has been happening in Philly sports. We're just here to kind of bide time until football's back, right? Wrong.
Yeah.
There's so much to get into today. Now, we can go a whole bunch of different ways here. And I know that, like, we have a lot of thoughts on what's been happening with the Flyers, with trades yesterday. You know, I usually do Snow the Goalie, the only Flyers podcast. But there was a problem. Anthony Sanfilippo, Ant San Francisco, Ant San Phony, decided that he's going to go down to Southern Florida during the trade deadline. So we're going to do Snow the Goalie tomorrow, but we had people going, where's the emergency pot? Sean Walker trade. And I want to get to that. But I don't want people to get turned off. You know, like, hockey talk is big. It's important. But I think there are some other things that people want to hear from as well. I'm going to let the chat decide, because I do think that that is probably the biggest thing that's happened. You know what, Broads? Let's do this the right way until we hear from the people in the comments on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter, okay? Let's start with the thing that has a lot of people pissed off. And Craig, I want you to pull this up from the site. I didn't tell you about this ahead of time. Pagan wrote a post about what an abomination is happening in right field at Citizens Bank Park. I think it's the top story right now on Crossing Broad. And it's something that has me absolutely incensed. And I got a feeling, after a little chitty chat with Broads pre-show, that he's not as upset about it as I am. The Phillies have decided to desecrate right field. They got rid of the out-of-town scoreboard. The only thing that really made it feel like an old-timey ballpark in a park that, by the way, is the nicest stadium the entire city has. They've gone. They are corporate shills. They have killed Dollar Dog Night. They extended Zach Wheeler. And apparently, to pay for it, we have to look at this shit in right field. And the people in the podcast feed who can't see it after the fact, we're looking at the right field where the entire right field scoreboard has been replaced by LED signs and advertisements for Hers and Temple Health and Hatfield and Rothman. Broads, why don't you care about this? Why do I care? We're practically the same age. Why do we have such varied takes on this? Please explain.
Because you're a ridiculous jerk off. That's why. There's
That's probably it.
Yeah. And I'm not. That's the thing, is I'm not. But dude, I don't give a damn. I don't care. You know
why?
What I care about? Bryce Harper against Spencer Strider, 3-2 count. And if he hits a moonshot to right field, are you gonna go, man, that would have been a lot sweeter if the freaking out-of-town scoreboard was different? Grow up. And Dollar Dog Night sucked, too. The line 7 hours to get a $1 hot dog. I'd rather spend $15 for a hot dog and get it in 5 seconds so I don't miss the game.
That is true.
There's too much outrage here. All right, let's go win a damn championship. Forget about the, oh, what does it look like on the score? I don't care.
It's the feeling.
No,
it's all about what you have in your heart and your soul. This sport, right? Like, look, I loved baseball in college, right? I went to more Phillies games, I think, in 4 years at Westchester University than I had at any other point in my life and ever have since, right? But there is something to be said for just a tiny bit. I can't believe I'm saying this. For a tiny bit of tradition. They changed the big scoreboard. I love the big scoreboard. I love the big LED out in left field. I think it looks great. give me something that's just a little old school down in the right field scoreboard. Why can't we just have one thing that isn't covered in an absurd amount of advertising? Do we need the screens there? What good are we going to get from it, Broads? What value add does having a Rothman scoreboard ad swapping out with Hatfield every 5 minutes? What does that do to enhance the experience for people at Citizens Bank?
No, it definitely doesn't enhance at all. It just puts more money in Middleton's pocket. But if Middleton's willing to open up that checkbook nonstop, well, then he needs to find ways to bring in more revenue. If that's the payoff to get Bryce Harper, Trey Turner, and JT, what if John Middleton said, Russ, sit down in my office. Let me tell you something. You want that old scoreboard? Okay, I'll give you that old scoreboard, but you're not getting Wheeler, and you're not getting Nola. You only get one. But if I get that scoreboard, then now we can start talking about both. Are you going to say, Mr. Middleton, thanks for having me. Your cigars suck. But by the way, I'd rather have the old scoreboard. Stop. Now everything changes. Yankee Stadium's not the same. Fenway at some point has to change. We just got to adapt, all right? And if you're going to go, Mr. Tommy Toughnuts, get off my lawn, then we're never going to get better in society.
I love being called Tommy Toughnuts.
Yeah, Tommy
Toughnuts. I'm going to tell my wife to call me that from now on. When she gets home tonight, I'm going to say, call me Tommy Toughnuts.
It's a dangerous game to play. You know, I've tried it myself.
I'm Tommy Toughnuts. You know, my cousin Meatballs Marinara. We got a thing going, you know?
Meatballs Marinara? Guess what? It's not going to end well for you. I promise you that.
Yeah. Yeah. Looney the Long Hot. Anyway. All right. So we've now passed this. And I was looking for people with their feedback. And I think I know where we're going to go next. And by the way, if Middleton had me in his office, I would tell him. I'd say, listen, you are the best owner the city has. Okay.
Wow.
The best one.
It's a slap
the best
in the
one.
Face to
the one. No,
Joshua,
hold on.
To Joshua Harris.
Oh, I know. What a horrible thing. You know, like, I like Dan Hilferty a lot, but he's not the owner. He's the governor of the team. And he does a great job and, like, as voice of the fan and all that. And he's been on Snow the Goalie a bunch and, like, great guy. He doesn't own the team. And he would be the first one to tell you that. It's Brian Roberts and Big Comcast. And we'd never hear or see from Brian Roberts, so I don't know. Okay. However, Middleton is the one who puts the money up. Middleton is the one who puts his money where his mouth is. And like in a sport that doesn't have a cap, he continues to be willing to spend more and more. Now, do I think that they're going to want to go? I was listening to Crossed Up yesterday with Aunt Sanfoni and Big Bet Bob Wankel. And they were talking about the luxury tax, about the third tax tier, right? If you go after like a Montgomery and like, listen, if the idea here is you do have to do some of this stuff because you have to get a return and there are better ways to bring in actual revenue and it does improve the team, then fine. It's okay. I just look at it like I always thought that was one kind of cool homage to the past. And that's it. All right. So there, we got a little bit of a dissenting view here. Looks like the people in the comments, you know, they don't care. Ian Johnson said that he doesn't care if Middleton puts a scoreboard on his front lawn if he signs Snell or Montgomery in a few days. I don't know why he thinks that it's a slap in the face to Lurie. Lurie's not a good owner. Lurie meddles.
Lurie
meddles.
He may.
He's got blinders on for the guy that builds the team, who built a flawed roster, who continues to, you know,
I agree,
there are some issues there.
But Jeffrey Lurie still is a good owner. So you're not wrong with some of the things you're saying.
I'm not saying he's a bad one. I'm just saying he's not the best one.
Fair, but I think it's easier in baseball to get out of the way than it is in football, because what owner in football truly gets out of the way? I don't really. You got Carolina's guy throwing beer and water on people. Jerry Jones is nonstop, but you're right. I mean, he is blinded by Howie has him brainwashed and all that stuff. He's not perfect.
This is good. Now see, I don't know where your frame of reference is on the union though, so like if you don't have much of one, it's okay. So Tyler DeMuro. And I always do this for the podcast people because they can't see. Maybe they can see. But when they're listening,
the visual's
not there. So who's worse, Sugarman or Josh Harris? Sugarman, 50 times over, 100 times a Sunday. Anybody who hates Josh Harris or is like, this guy's a jackass because he owns teams in other markets and like they hate that, or they think he's an asshole because he wants to build a downtown arena, he at least spends money and he's at least willing to like have some vision. Jay Sugarman is maybe the worst owner, and not just MLS, but in all of sports.
Can Kevin Durant step in here or what?
Durant bought a minority share of the team, a minority stake a few years ago, and there would be nothing better than him taking a larger chunk or them bringing in additional investors. Sugarman has this, I mean, it's a beautiful stadium. Subaru Park is beautiful.
Yeah,
it's in Chester, which isn't great. They've had all these like failed attempts, and like Kincaid, I'm sure, like is probably like, I think he's getting surgery today on his flap. Seriously. And I'm thinking that like he's probably going in and out of anesthesia right now, listening to the show, like talking about all the different mayors who have let things down. But like they have this beautiful park. They have arguably the best front office exec in Ernst Tanner, who finds guys in like the fourth division of like Swedish soccer. They come in and they're all stars. They are like the ultimate money ball. Sugarman is in a top market and in a top soccer market and a top sports market and does not spend money. I know it's because he doesn't have it, but he didn't spend the money. And so that sucks. And if you actually are invested in the union, you care about the union, you know how much you hate Jay Sugarman and his lack of willingness to open up whatever checkbook he actually has.
It seems that way.
He is the worst. Like, he's by far, like, there. You could go, all right, so let's rank this out real quick, all right? So you're going to give me the top five, and you're just going to agree with me that Sugarman's at the bottom.
Okay.
So I say Middleton is number one. I guess Lurie's number two. Brian Roberts, who we never hear from, is number three, because at least he gives them resources and money. And then Josh Harris is number four, and Jay Sugarman's 15.
Yeah, I so can like, get behind
where
that.
Do you want to get behind that? You're fine with the.
I can get behind that. I mean, if you want to flip flop Lurie and Middleton, I got no problem. I think they're almost toe in toe right now. They both do great things for sure. The Joshua Harris thing, I always get backlash for, because while I do think it's an advantage if you are like Middleton, you could feel the connection, throwing baseballs. That's obviously better than the alternative. And when you buy a division rival of the football team, when you own the basketball team, it's very bizarre for sure. But, you know, from a Camden facility level to a, hey, I'm firing Brett Brown, but I'm still going to pay him. Here's Doc Rivers. Hey, I'm firing Doc Nickner. Like, he is willing to – I know, it's frustrating. I'm with you. But, you know, and B gets paid. Ben gets paid. Tobias gets paid. He's giving you the assets you need to succeed. He doesn't have that relationship with the fan base, but from a we need to be competitive and we need the assets to be competitive, he does give you that for whatever it's worth. So,
that's true.
He brings in Daryl Morey, who was a big name at the time. Say what you want about what he's done here, but getting him, the moment he got let go from Houston and he was available, the whole entire basketball world was, whoa,
everybody
got to go
him.
Get him.
Yeah,
you know, so he's willing to do that. That is, it actually, those four, it's a pretty good four owners outside of the union, that is. Pretty good four owners to have in a city. It could be significantly worse.
It could be worse. Go ahead.
Here's my take on the union that we don't really talk about a lot, and I'm even one of them.
Some A-block union talk.
Listen to this. That was the worst loss of all the teams that were fighting in a championship, or the Phillies against the Arizona Diamondbacks, NLCS. That collapse, was that 2022, 2021,
that
whatever
22.
It was?
Yeah, that was 22.
They had an extra. They were down a man.
That was the same night they lost to that the Phillies lost to the Astros.
Yeah,
they,
game six. Yeah, it was the same day.
They were in extra time.
Dude.
And with a minute left. I think it was actually past stoppage time. They let Gareth Bale come in.
Gross.
Mbizo lost him.
Gross.
Horrific. All time. Bad
moment. Arguably the worst loss in Philadelphia sports. I mean, it's that bad of a loss. Now, it won't hit the same, obviously, but that was gross.
If people gave as much of a shit about the union as they do the other teams, the city would have been on fire.
Oh my!
It was horrific.
God.
Although it did end up being on fire because the Phillies ended up losing the same night to the
Astros.
Yeah,
but you know what? Here's the thing about that series is, yes, say what you want about Jose Alvarado coming in, Zach Wheeler, this and that. The Astros were better. I mean, at the end of the day, the Astros were better than the Phillies. Last year, I thought the Phillies were the best team left and could have beat the Rangers in seven. That's why it hurts more. But I'm not saying it's easy to walk. You got to maximize those opportunities because you never know when you're going to get back. But at the end of the day, I thought the Astros were a better team. So I was sad and upset, but it wasn't a colossal failure. Last year for the Phillies was. But that Union team, that was a colossal
failure. That was bad. That was really bad. Now, in fairness, and that year, you could have made a case between the two teams that they were pretty equally matched.
But okay, I'm not sure about who they played.
But there's your big difference, though. Like I was saying about the money thing. Like Gareth Bale was brought in, and like he was at the end of his career, but like he was still, relative to MLS, he was still very elite, right? And so like they were a star-studded team. Like they individually, they were better. The collective sum of the parts was also better. But the union actually had a chance. Like it was good. All right. We've now somehow gotten off on the union. We talked about the scoreboard. Can we really quickly, I just wanted to get your thoughts here on Jason Kelce being gone. That is retirement. But more than anything, I want to get your reaction to how people have reacted about Jason Kelce moving on, because I've been a little bit thrown off. I think that I talked about this on Tuesday, but I do think that a lot of people felt like they connected with him on a human level, and that there was like something kind of about that likability and the relatability that he brought to the table. And a lot of that was because of his podcast and was just because of him being a man of the people, you know, going down to Jersey and bartending and all that. But the way that people were, like, they were crushed, they were emotionally crushed. It was like they lost a member of their family, or like their family pet died or something. Like, people were genuinely, like, in tears on your station over on WIP.
Yeah,
they were crying. Like, they were crying.
Yeah.
Are you surprised? Do you think that this is normal behavior? Like, where do you land?
Normal behavior. See, the thing is, I'm going to use John Ritchie as the example because, you know, I'm sure there were fans that cried, but it feels to me, and I'm just speculating, you know, but he played the game and it hit different because he knows what it's like to put that uniform on. He knows what it's like to play and what it means to someone who got to play at that level. So I think he's got a very unique perspective compared to, you know, someone who's a family of four and he's a father and he loves football and didn't play at that level and all. So I think it does vary depending on who you're talking about. But yeah, you know, I'm not surprised because this is what we are. We always discuss why we're the best fans. We're so passionate. It means different here. So when someone leaves the game like Kelce, I don't remember what it's like to watch football without Jason Kelce. Iron Man streak, always available. There's nothing better. Sunday Night Football, lead blocker on the slow-mo. He's got his forearm pushing people back 7 yards. We'll never see this again. So I'm not really surprised. This is what makes it great to play in this town and why, you know, we are who we are. So no, I'm not surprised. And I was sad. I mean, don't get me wrong. I wasn't in tears, but it hit me in a way where I was uncomfortable and I was in my like, damn, dude. But
how deep in your feelings were you? Were you in the kiddie pool? Were you in like the shallow end? Did you go up neck high?
I say shallow end.
At the bottom of the 8-foot section. Like, did you have to have swimmies?
Shallow.
Where were you?
Shallow end. But here's why, though. Once again, it relates back to, I remember what it was like when I hung up the skates for the last time, and I knew that this was the last time I was going to play college hockey. So knowing that, it brought me back to that time of just knowing what that pain is like. But I was also excited for the next step, and he has a lot of things laid out, ready to roll, I'm sure, media, this and that. So, you know, things are going. But it goes back to relating that moment the last time I walked out of the locker room, and I know how crushing it is. So it's a horrible feeling that you never want anybody to go through. And that's why I felt the way that I did.
You know what? I had that feeling in high school. My last band concert.
There you
playing
go.
Tenor, playing saxophone, just like Jason Kelce.
There you go.
I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm an American hero.
It doesn't
like
matter
Kelce,
what
you know?
It is. It's no, that like, passion and that fire you have.
I get that. Listen, I think that when you have a personal connection, like when you've actually had a personal interaction with the guy, as like I saw some of those clips going around on social work from the station, like I think that's a totally different thing. I think that when you've actually met the person, you've had that connection, you've had that interaction, to me, like that's, you are more than beyond. Listen, as a fan, you have your right to feel however you want. But I think that's like a little bit different. I think that if you've just kind of like sat back and you're like, I love this man for what he did for my team playing center for the last decade. Like that's great, but like I don't know if we're crying about it. But again, he did a great job, and like this is all part of that transition that I think he's been executing masterfully into the media space by doing the podcast with his brother. And like I see a bunch of people in the comments also saying that like the documentary on Amazon was a big part of it because it opened up so much of his life. And I can tell you this, I didn't watch it.
Wow.
And a big part of why I didn't watch it is because I like to still somehow remain relatively objective. And now that he's retired, I'm going to watch it. Like my mother-in-law said to me, she's like, you have to watch this movie. She's like, Jason Kelce's wife and my wife have a very similar affect. She's like, it'll blow your mind. I'm like, okay, well, I trust you. When he retires, I'll watch it. So now it's like on the watch list. And now you have a very small child, so I think you probably get this. But like there ain't a lot of TV watching in this house. Now, I have four, right? I have four small kids, two of whom just got back, and for the first time in their lives, actually followed instructions. I told them when I dropped them off at the bus stop this morning, Dad's going to be doing a show when you get back.
Is one a pianist, by the way?
You know, he was trying to play Carol of the Bells this morning.
Okay.
And he just like he was doing the Bluey sound, the Bluey theme song, right?
Good luck. Yep.
And then
good
he transitioned into doing Carol of the Bells. And he was trying to figure it out. Got a good ear for music. My wife's a music teacher. I did, you know, the music as well. The music. But he's like,
I got a story for you
at like 3x speed, like a psycho. And like he couldn't get it because he won't slow down. And then he did it. And he was so proud of himself. I'm like, all right, cool. But he did it at like 3x speed.
How old is he?
8.
Oh, nice. So my brother's a pianist. He works on Bourbon Street, and he dual piano bar. That's what he does. So I grew up in the whole.
How about that?
On the music side. Yeah, he does the whole thing, dude. He's got guitar, yarmulke. He does the whole thing. The whole thing. He does it all.
A proverbial music man.
Dude, but the problem is, when I was super, he does Barry Manilow. That's dude, so here I am.
Cabana.
I'm 7 trying to play GameCube in the basement, right? It's Raw versus SmackDown, and I'm going nuts with my boys. We're trying to play GameCube. Here he is singing Coca-Cabana. And I'm like, dude, what are we doing here? I mean, you shouldn't be, you're 10. You shouldn't be singing Barry Manilow.
Brock Lesnar. Her name was Lola. She was a showgirl. This doesn't line up. This doesn't work. That's good. That's good stuff.
That's so right.
I love
man.
It. Ford is on it. Ford has at least one small kid. Like, if you're a parent and you haven't watched Bluey yet, it's a good show.
We're getting Miss Rachel in the mix now. So
I've never done the Miss Rachel thing. I know a lot of people like speak highly of it. I have not gone that route. We're very limited in like the amount of TV that we do in this house too with the kids. So it's like I see people like, oh, let my kids watch, you know, YouTube for 5 hours because it, you know, helps me get through it. I'm like, I don't know what we're doing here.
I'm
no
not
judgment.
There yet. No,
no
I'm
judgment.
Not there.
I'm more of the I'm the judgmental type at the restaurant. I definitely am. I'm the guy who like, listen, I was a teacher, right? So I get the whole, there are kids on the spectrum that it helps. There are kids with different disorders and such that like that is helpful. And to those families, like tip of the cap, you're saints for being able to get through your day to day, right? However, there are a lot of fucking lazy parents out there who just put their kid on an iPad at dinner. And I guess it's so that they can interact with their spouse. But like, you know what we do? Fuck, I'm like an old man. I have the scoreboard thing and I have this. You know what we do when we go to breakfast? Our kids make games with the little jelly things, like stacking, who can stack the highest.
Perfect.
Same thing with little creamers, right? I feel like an old ass man, but I'm like, you can't be so screen dependent. Like, that's a problem. You know,
I agree. Now my baby, she's 2.5 months, so we're not into that predicament yet. But no
I'm
doubt.
Check
I'm not.
In, listen, in about 10 months, I'm going to check in. Yeah, I see how you're doing with it.
I say it now. No, I'm
big over the ear headphones, and it's just like, oh my god. Again, kids with different things where it's like a necessity or whatever. Like totally, big disclaimer, and I get it to some extent. Fine. All right, let's get into something else.
Yeah.
Because this is why people are here. Although we keep adding people. Like, I don't know if you're watching the number. The number keeps going up. The more off the rails we get. Oh, you can't see it.
I can't see
it. Well, we started the show with about 300. We're up to 792 right now. So, like, something. People are happy about something here. They're I don't know. They're just enjoying. They're enjoying this. See, enjoying this.
Oh, I got you.
You see that? The roads to Broads. Yeah. Ian didn't say that, but I just did. All right.
That was my hashtag for the wedding. Actually, it was Roady to Brody. I wanted Road to Broads, and she said no. But
Road to
Broads is solid.
You know, Road to Broads is pretty good.
Yeah,
that's good stuff. We've now crossed 800. Good for us. Hey, look at us. All right, take a second. We've talked Phillies. We somehow got off on Union. We talked about the parenting thing. Now Jason Kelce. Are we allowed? Can we ask the people? Can we talk about the biggest sham going on in the city right now? Can we talk about the thing that like we were sold on as being a good thing that has very clearly turned out to be a disastrous one and one that I've been very outspoken about? Can we get there now? Is it okay?
Yes.
Tobias Harris fucking sucks. Tobias Harris is an absolute embarrassment. You thought I was going Flyers.
I did.
I was going Flyers.
I really did.
Tobias Harris is the biggest embarrassment in the history of Sixers basketball. I sat through years of watching Xander Blue. I watched Hollis Thompson. I watched some bad basketball. I watched Eddie Jordan run the Princeton offense. Tobias Harris was being relied upon with Tyrese Maxey, God love him, out with a concussion. And we wish him the best because he's maybe the best, most positive human being in Philadelphia sports right now. You're without Joel Embiid. Tobias Harris is getting paid almost $40 million. He scored, was it 8 points last night in a loss to Memphis? Was it 8? I think it was 8 points.
Yeah, 3 of 12, I believe.
Oh,
312. He can't make the money to save
grift,
his life.
Dude, the ultimate grift.
Well, here's where I'll push back. You say he's the biggest embarrassment in Sixers. We did just go off the Ben Simmons experience. All right, now listen, here's my take on Tobias. I'm the long leash guy with him. I've been protecting him for a while, saying he's playing bad basketball. He's not a bad basketball player. But now is enough. I mean, this is I've reached a break point where if I break, there's probably no one left in the city kind of thing. You can't lose them. You had a double-digit lead against Memphis. You don't even have there's Ja Morant. This and they don't have guard play. It's just a bunch of wings. And you lose that game when you have a double-digit lead in the fourth. And here's another thing. Even if you're not scoring, for whatever reason, you're in a slump. And I'm not telling you he's got to be the best facilitator in the world, but can we see a night where he grabs 9 rebounds, 10 rebounds, and gives you 7. In other ways, he'll help out the team because he's struggling.
Yes. That's contribute all. In a meaningful way.
Against like, the listen, Grizzlies.
Now, I'm going to push back on the Ben Simmons thing, who, by the way, he's now been ruled out for the rest of the season as he talks to more specialists about the back impingement thing. It is very easy to dunk on Ben Simmons. I get it. I have myself been responsible for like some goofy ass things on Twitter where I've like kind of taken pot shots with love. But like still pot shots, right? I do wish him the best. I'm not going to compare this to Nolan Patrick losing his career to concussions, but I am just going to say, when you're a guy who was picked as highly as those guys were, you do have to love your sport to some extent. Now, people have questioned Ben Simmons in the same way they questioned Nolan Patrick about the commitment to getting better, the commitment to excellence, to the sport, all that. I get it. Ben Simmons was a guy who they drafted with the thought he could potentially become a LeBron-esque sort of guy. Right. I always looked at him when he was at his peak powers. I was like, this guy, if you built a team around him, he could be Giannis-esque. Giannis light.
Me too.
Giannis sugar-free. Okay. Surround him with shooters. Let him play that style. He doesn't have to score for you. If he's afraid to shoot the ball, he can help your team in so many other ways. Right. And it didn't work. And it didn't work here. And it all fell apart. And I do wish the guy the best because this sucks. And like, he will continue. There are two parts, right? One, he's going to make a lot of money. He probably has a lot of money in the bank. His life is much easier than all of ours. However, you don't play to get to the NBA, to be a number one overall pick. You don't play to, like, just collect a paycheck and become the laughing stock of the league. I have to think that in his mind, he was destined for greatness for many All-Stars, maybe for the Hall of Fame, like, in his mind. And this sucks. He did, in theory, give it his all when he was playing here. He just suffered some really shitty injuries. It did fall apart at the end. But, like, Tobias got this massive, massive payday, which, by the way, was one of the worst contracts this team has given out in decades. And I am very well aware that they signed Al Horford. Like, I get it. But Tobias Harris has been every bit of a letdown. Again, the money he was making, right? He was the fourth option on the team when James Harden was here. James Harden goes away. Tyrese Maxey, you're saying, young dude, young guy, be the lead guard, be our lead scorer when Joel's not playing, be the number two option, right? Tobias, the least that you should be able to expect from Tobias Harris is Thaddeus Young. Can I at least get Thaddeus Young production? And the answer is no. Like, seriously, put your hat back on from like 15-ish years ago to Thaddeus Young, right? Gets you like 15 a game, can maybe shoot like 36% from three. I'm making these numbers up, but I'm pretty sure they're close, right? Like, pull down 9 boards a game, maybe 10, exploit some mismatches, like, do something. And I am just always befuddled by his just lack of intrinsic motivation. There appears to be no fire on the inside with Tobias Harris. He looks like a guy who knows he's not destined to be here beyond this year, and he's just, I think he's in his own head.
Oh, he definitely is.
There's a small part of me that does feel bad for him on the human level, that, like, he's very lost. But holy shit, man.
No,
like,
I'm with you. All right,
just
so I got
do
some
something.
Thoughts. I got some thoughts.
Bring the thoughts.
The fact that you say you felt Ben Simmons gave it his all when he was here, there's no way. The dude was a fraud. Ben Simmons was an absolute fraud, and he's making up lies, and it's making up lies so he can go through the CBA, mental health issues, this and that, Rich Paul, the whole thing. It was a disaster what he was doing, and I actually give Tobias credit here on this regard. He made one remark off the top of my head about a crumble cookie. Other than that, that dude's been getting, in a world where Darius Slay nonstop attacks the fans. AJ Brown nonstop attacks the fans. Ben Simmons attacked the fans. Everybody attacks the fans. I'll give Tobias credit here. He just shuts up and goes out there. Now, he's not playing well, and that's a problem. But the dude has probably embraced more criticism than all of these athletes, and he just attacks the floor every day. Now, he attacks it, unfortunately, horrendously, but I do think that he does a great job just sort of not even giving anybody the time of day there other than the crumble cookie. Now, with that said, there's been everyone thinks that Tobias has just stunk every year. Tobias Harris last year, I'm not telling you it was perfect. It was not perfect. I'm just saying Joel Embiid game 7, James Harden game 7, bigger problems than Tobias. Game 6, wide open looks everywhere. De'Anthony Melton, clank, clank, clank. You had wide open looks in game 6. All you needed to do was execute, and the team couldn't execute. Now, you can make the argument Joel should have got the ball more, but I've also watched Michael Jordan rely on Steve Kerr to hit a big shot. You need complementary pieces, and they failed them in game 6. Tobias played defense against Jason Tatum very, very well on a team that had no size at all. And the Boston Celtics exposes you on the wings. And every year you look at a Celtics matchup, every team goes, what's the number one thing? Well, how do we stop Jason Tatum? You had an option in Tobias Harris, who held his own more than most can in this league against it. He's had some important postseason matchups and moments that he doesn't get credit for over this long haul here of the miserable contract that I think needs to get noticed. So my point is, Tobias hasn't been great. He hasn't been as bad as what the city has given him in the playoffs over the last few years. But right now, it's abysmal, and that's my
thought.
But he hasn't been as bad as what people have said he's been in the playoffs with the Sixers. That I will stand on.
He's better. Yeah. Hey, do you hear that sound?
What is that?
I'm going to toot my own horn. I just pulled up to Thaddeus Young's stats from 15 years ago. What did I say? I said 15 points a game, right?
Is that Young still kicking?
Yeah, he is. So I said he started the season playing for Toronto. He played 6 games. We'll get there in a second. 15 years ago, I said 15 points, 36% from beyond. He averaged 15.3 points, 34% from beyond the arc. Now, I was off on the rebounds, though. I think I said pull down 10 rebounds a game. He only averaged 5 that season. So that is my fault. And I do want to apologize.
Yeah, disrespect.
In a time where we need transparency, it's an election year. We need transparency. I'm going to say right now, while I was right about many things, I was a little bit wrong about Thaddeus Young's ability to pull down the boards. So I'm sorry to anybody I offended with the rebound number being so off. I was right on 2 of 3. And listen, in baseball, 2 out of 3 is great. It's fantastic.
Yeah, but you know what I prefer? I prefer Kyle Schwarber. Give me 180, but I'm hitting 50 bombs. So when I'm right, I'm right, baby. But when I'm wrong, I'm Nick Castellanos swinging off the plate. But that's okay. You got to take some risks in this damn business. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that's fair. That's fair. All right, so Tobias thinks. We got that. All right, now I'm going to test the audience out there. We're at 936 people that I can see here in the studio. We've gotten closer to 1,000. I was wondering if we'd get there. I'm afraid if we go to the next topic, we're going to lose. So I'm like, I'm up against it here. I don't have a Nielsen, meter here, all right? But I'm looking at, we're almost at 950. I almost like want to waste the time here so we don't lose people. Because I'm afraid, all right, we're going to do it. We're going to do it because this is a Philly sports show. And we're not just playing the hits. We are going to talk about something that is a big story in the city of Philadelphia. Okay? Because it's something that it really does have a lot of relevance this week. And I think that's really important to note. Like, we're not just doing this because it's in the essence of, or in fairness of just kind of spreading it out. We are going to talk about this. The Flyers have a trade deadline coming up on Friday. They have it tomorrow, 3 o'clock. And I came on this show Tuesday, and I called out the fact that this team said rebuild, rebuild, rebuild. And the only thing that we had been told, the only thing that looked like was trending in the right direction, is that they were going to make one deal and they might be a third party on one trade. And I said on Tuesday, if that's what ultimately happens, that is a failure. That is not what a rebuild is supposed to be, especially with guys, multiple guys, who are about to become unrestricted free agents. And I said it on this show, and I said, we're going to give them a couple of days. We'll be back on Tuesday. We'll talk about it, and we'll extend that little bit of a grace period. And what happened yesterday, Broats? The Flyers got a first-round pick for Sean Walker, right? They ate a $4 million cap hit on Johansson. They facilitated two moves, one move, another move, a three-team trade where they took on like a $2.5 million cap hit for a fifth-round pick. And I guess what I'm just trying to say is, you're welcome. I am officially the catalyst to Philadelphia sports. Because before I called out the Flyers on Crossing Broadcast, everyone's favorite Philadelphia sports podcast on Tuesday, they weren't doing anything. They hadn't done anything. What we had heard was, oh, Sean Walker wants $5 million plus a year. We know that Nick Seeler wanted close to $4 million a year. That's what had been going around. I come on here and I say this thing. And obviously, this is a joke. I come on here and I call it out. Boom. They make deals. So let's get into it really quick. Sean Walker's a guy who, in the offseason, was acquired as like part of the Provorov deal. Three teams, right? He comes in from L.A. No one has any expectations for Sean Walker. Danny Briere flipped him for a first-round pick, and not in 2024 in what is being kind of panned as like a meh draft, but a 2025 first-round pick that's top 10 protected, and if somehow the wheels really, really fall off, then it'll convey to 2026. It won't. They'll get it next year.
Right.
Are you ready to build the Danny Briere statue?
Okay, so I'm leaning towards building it to not building it. I'll say that, but I'm definitely not there
51-49? Like, where are you at?
No,
where?
I'd say probably 75-25. Because
wow!
It's not just the show. So I'm not saying anybody could have done that, but when Sean Walker plays that way and the market is the market, I think outside of Chuck Fletcher, anyone sitting in that room probably could have realized that, hey, this is the market, let's make it happen. But it's the other things that really tickle the fancy. It's, okay, so you give up a fifth-round pick as well, but you find a way to get a fifth-round pick back. It's very Howie Roseman-esque where you're getting creative. He's always obsessed with the comp picks. Well, Danny Briere's doing other things to really help bolster up some late round picks that you moved in other deals. It's that savviness. So bringing on money as a third team, Chuck Fletcher wasn't doing that stuff. They weren't doing that forward thinking of, hey, here's money we have laying around. Let's do this. Let's do that. Because all his money was tied up in the Kevin Hayes. He didn't even have the opportunity to do it because of all the piss poor contracts he was sending around town with JVR and this and that. The whole thing was a mess. So I think it's those other key things outside of just the first round pick in return that makes me excited for Danny. But the Nick Seeler one opens up a different door.
So the Nick Seeler thing is upsetting to you, or like,
okay. All right, here's the Nick Seeler.
We're 40 or no, we're 37-ish minutes in. We've now crossed 1,000 people watching right now live across Crossing Broad's YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook. Over 1,000. Now, I may or may not have just told people a little white lie on Twitter that if we hit 1,000, you were going to shave your head. I'm sure that had nothing to do with the last 30 people coming in. Allegedly. You can't take me at my word on Twitter, right? Fair. I'm sorry. But I do love all of you who came here from Twitter who just saw that Broads will not shave his head. Well, he might. He might. Yeah, but as of right now, he's not committed to it. He's got some great lettuce up there. You can't see it because he's wearing the hat. But big thank you to everybody who hopped in here.
Now, someone brought up that JV.
Craig loves bringing up the tweets. This
Unbelievable.
Is good.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Well, listen, we crossed 1,000.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. I'd say that's a pretty good number. You know, like there are some outlets in the city who wish they could hit like 200 concurrent. We had 1,000, okay? I'd say it's pretty good. Not a bad day here at Crossing Broadcast. Okay, anyway.
That's funny. But someone brings up the JVR contract was Hextall, not. Yeah, but I'm saying it. You had nothing that you could do because your money and the compensation. You like that? But anyway, where was I? The Nick Seeler thing.
What were we talking about? We were going to go to Nick Seeler, which is really the big thing. Third pair guy.
Yeah. Okay. So
veteran.
You're not. I
blocks a lot of shots.
It's not horrendous. The money's not going to kill you.
2.7 per year. No movement clause for the first 2 years. Four-year deal.
The money's not going to kill you. It's just the messaging. So third pair defense. That's what he is. He's playing top 4 minutes now with Sean Walker, but if Nick Seeler over the next 4 years is a top four defenseman for you, you stink. Because I think Nick Seeler's playing above his head. I don't think Sean Walker, when he signs an extension or goes wherever he is, will be this good for the next 4 years or so. I don't think Nick Seeler's going to be a top four defenseman over the next 4 years. So if you have a third pair guy and you can get an asset for a third a third line guy, then they fall off trees. Danny Briere should be able to find the third pair defenseman anywhere. So if you can gain a third round pick for a Nick Seeler, I like that idea more than signing him to a long-term deal. So it's not going to destroy you. It's just more about, here's another guy that is a flyer. And they are in love with the Delorier, fourth line guy. Flyer, tall,
Ryan
Paling,
flyer, Ryan Hathaway, flyer.
I just think they get so sucked into the he's a flyer. He's what it means to be a flyer. I don't want what it means to be a flyer. And also, same with Lawton. All right, here's my thing on Lawton. And there's some rumors that maybe it's not over yet. In what
it's
world?
It's not over. I try to do it right this time around.
Get your brother in here. Yeah. All right.
No, we're doing, I was going to do the Creed voice.
No. That's
you
good
the Creed,
stuff.
You could do the Creed voice.
That's good
anyway,
stuff.
But, no, it's not. That was intentionally not. All right, go ahead.
So can I ask you a question? Do you think Scott Lawton, as a hockey player, I'm not talking about the intangibles, do you think Scott Lawton lived up to a first-round tag?
No.
Hockey-wise? No, not at all.
No.
In what world in sports are you ever given an opportunity to get a first-round pick for a first-round pick that didn't work out? Not very often. I don't know if they're going to get a first-round. They keep claiming they won't do it unless someone overpays. My rebuttal would be, in a rebuild, what if someone paid a fair price? So you're not getting undervalue, you're not getting overvalue. What if you get value? Actual value. To me, that's an obvious you move on from Scott Lawton because he doesn't really play that well anymore. Sure, a couple shorthanded goals here and there, that nice one-timer, that was cool. But at the end of the day, I'm done with the Scott Lawton thing. I don't care that he has an A on his chest. I want asset. You sell off. So I wanted Lawton, Sealer, and Walker all gone at the deadline, and I got one. So it's not the most egregious
thing ever.
It's not egregious, but I don't love it.
There have been a few other moves of forwards in the last few days that have also, like, if you're kind of piecing together what those guys are versus what Lawton is, you could see a scenario where potentially he could fetch you a first. Now, the funny thing is, Lawton has had, for the most part, a pretty underwhelming season. But then the All-Star break hit, and when they came out of it, he essentially flipped minutes with Sean Couturier.
Yeah.
And here's why I think this whole thing has gone sideways, okay? And, like, why I think we're not seeing the full breadth of what a rebuild is supposed to be, or like what a team that's supposed to sell at the deadline and has talked about selling at the deadline since the very beginning and since the offseason. I think the big reason is John Tortorella. I'm not saying that it's a bad thing, but I think that in this case, you have a coach that wants to make the playoffs because every coach wants to make the playoffs. Every coach has an ego. His is maybe a little bit bigger than some other ones, but like every coach wants to make the playoffs. Guys want to make the playoffs. Nobody wants to be told we're tanking or we're going to lose. Jonesy goes on WIP, a week ago or whatever, and like kind of tongue in cheek says, we told the guys in the locker room that it's all BS that we're rebuilding, right? Of course you're going to say that, right? Because the idea is you're telling these guys, go out, bust your ass and like see what happens, right? You're not telling these guys like we want you to go out and lose. All right. So it's a little bit different. But like Tortorella is coaching like every game matters, like it's a team that came into the season with expectations of doing something, of contending in some way. And I think that they've gotten a little bit infatuated with this idea of the playoffs. They've seen the bright lights, and they are attracted to it like a fly. And listen, they are too far down the road now to potentially like sell off some parts and really like try to bottom out. They're nowhere close to it. It doesn't make any sense. It sends all the wrong messages. However, they, I think, made a mistake by going after it the way that they have. And I think what you've seen, and you could probably speak to this as well as a guy who played in college, Sean Couturier missed two seasons with back injuries, significant back injuries that may have cost him his career. And this coach rode him into the ground. I mean, he was riding Couturier for the first 3-4 months of the season. And it wasn't until February that his minutes really started to tick down, and they've gone down even further since March. And I am concerned about that because here's your captain. He didn't get a single shift in overtime the other night. Here's your captain, the guy that you said is the embodiment of what it is to be a Flyer, what it is to be a Flyers captain, and he's playing fewer minutes now. And the guy that you've replaced him with is a guy who, in theory, you should be looking to trade in Scott Lawton because Ryan Poehling gives you everything that Scott Lawton does, or many of the same things. He's essentially expendable. You missed an opportunity to trade him for a first in the offseason. If the opportunity presents itself again, Your real question is, do we think it's worth trading a first rounder now and having that asset for the rebuild, or are we going to hang on to this guy again, hope that we can get the same value in the offseason because we're chasing a playoff spot? And that's where I think it's a problem, because right, everything should be rebuild in mind.
Yep.
But that doesn't appear to be what is happening here.
No, it doesn't. And it is a tough balance. By no means do I think this is easy. And I wasn't rooting for them to fail all year long. I did want them to be in this position. I just hope that they handled this position a little bit differently, because I do find value in Owen Tippett showing up to the rink every day, knowing the Islanders are on their ass. Or, you know, look, yeah, the Devils ended up firing their head coach. They're a mess. But, you know, I want them to know what it's like with pressure. Tyson Forster, hey, there's 20 games left. You need to make a playoff spot, and you're battling for that final Metropolitan gig. I need you to know. And then he scores the one goal, then has a penalty shot right after. That stuff's important to me. I prefer that compared to going to the rink and saying, hey, we're going to get our asses kicked 6-2 and win 15 games, like a Buffalo Sabres run a few years ago, is nonstop garbage. So I prefer this for sure, but it is a tough balance. And you know, you keep hearing the rebuttal, well, who would play minutes if you traded Mark
Stahl? Hey, lift up the hat. I just want to make sure that you're not bald under there, because that's usually Ant Sanfoni.
I know.
Who's going to replace him? This is where he goes Don Vito mode. Remember Don Vito? Viva La Bam? Bam Margera's uncle?
Don Vito?
That's Ant sometimes when he gets like really worked up about the, well, who's going to play the minutes? Who's going to play them? Who's going to be your third pair defenseman? Who's going to play second pair minutes? I don't care. It's a rebuild.
Yeah. Bring up the rebuild. Is it Ginning or Ginning? How do you pronounce the kid up in the minors?
Yeah. Either way, it's like Giff and Jiff. Yeah. But like, listen. That's the thing.
Attard?
It's a rebuild. It's supposed to be a rebuild.
Attard.
I'm not saying throw Ronnie Attard and Ginning in and throw in Zamula every night and like do that. I'm not saying that. But if you can't in the next 2 years, and this is the whole thing with Sean Walker, which is why I think it's a good idea that they moved him. It's a good thing that they moved him. If you can't develop a guy or sign a guy in the next 2 or 3 years, before Mishkov comes over and you're ready to flip the switch, if you can't do that and identify that guy, that's a significant problem.
Yeah.
The thing I had about Seeler was, when the rumor was Seeler was looking for $4 million a year, I said, I'm sorry, but like, intangibles or not, you can't do that, because if you can't find a guy who could play on your third pair or develop that guy, then like, that says more about your organization, your ability to like develop players. That's a significant issue.
Yep.
Seeler, I actually think, they have eyes to having Seeler do some second pair minutes. Like, I could totally see a scenario where they say, we want, when he's healthy, maybe this year or maybe going into next year, that they'll want to like make him the safety blanket for Cam York. And like, maybe that's where they'll go. I do think that they're going to still look to move Ristolainen in the offseason.
That's great.
They're going to have to retain salary, right?
That's great.
You'll have Sanheim and Drysdale together. You might put York with Seeler. I don't know what the third pair is going
to
look like.
I was talking to someone who knows a little bit in the works, if you will, and says, don't be surprised if Shabbat comes here from Ottawa in the off season. So could you have Shabbat and Drysdale? Can you have York and Sanheim? And then I don't know if Andre's ready, you know what I'm saying? But you have Seeler in there. I mean, that would be a nice top four, though. If York and Sanheim's your second pair and you have Drysdale, if he's able to stay healthy, that's a solid top four. Now, let me ask you this, though, because when Nick Seeler, people were saying to me, would you rather have Nick Seeler on this contract or a third-round pick that might not hit, right? And my rebuttal is, it's their job to find the third rounder, right? I'm not saying it's easy. You can give me the percentages on, well, first round hits actually 50%, this and that. Yeah, but I can give you Adam Fox, Gensel, Grizzly, Tyson Berry, Chris Letang. There's third rounder. Johnny Gaudreau, fourth round pick. If I can't judge them on picking third or fourth round picks, then I can't have an opinion on any draft picks, and that's unfair to me because they get paid a lot of money to find this talent. Yeah, I would say what I would like to do is get Nick Seeler off, because you can find a third pair defenseman anywhere, get a third round pick, and then I demand you to find one of these guys I just mentioned, because that's your job. Is that a crazy take?
I don't think so.
Okay, thank you.
I don't think so. But I will say that, like, if the idea is have one of these guys around to make the playoff run between Walker and Seeler, and like, if you're going to, for whatever reason, if you're going to decide that you do have to sign one of those guys, I was actually in favor of signing Seeler.
Sure.
If the number was okay.
Right? Yeah, that's cool. I agree.
And so, like, I look at it because, again, Walker got you a first, right? Seeler was maybe going to get you a mid-round pick, maybe.
Yeah.
Like, Is there a team that would have been desperate enough to try to move him for a two? No, I don't.
No,
think so.
I think third is
three,
where you were playing.
A three, maybe a conditional fourth, right? That like could have gone up to a third. And at that point, I say, well, then no, it's not worth trading both of those guys away to have that lottery ticket. If this were perceived to be a deep draft, I'd say, all right, look, cool.
This is where I'd rebuttal though, because okay. what I was thinking was in
rebut
my mind
away.
Yes. If you move three of those guys, right, it's less about, well, what was that one, right? That was a third for Sealer. I was more looking along the lines of, if you trade Lawton for a first, and you get a first for Sean Walker, and you get a third for Sealer, if you told me you move those three guys and your package that was sent back was two firsts and a third, I'm signing on the dotted lines. So I was looking at it more along the, instead of
okay.
one for one, this for that, it was, here's what I'm getting in return for sending yeah. three guys out. Now, maybe that's flawed. You know, but that's how I was sort of looking at it. Two firsts and a third, and you move Walker, Lawton, and Sealer at the deadline? I mean, that's a good haul.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's certainly better than you probably would have expected going into the season. I think that the thing that really is tricky is Lawton. Like, I really do. I think that they're going to still get a good offer before tomorrow at 3. Like, I think that they will. And I think that trying to make a playoff run is important at this point. Again, you can't bottom out. And I don't think that having a hockey purgatory pick is really going to help you all that much right now.
No, I'm
right?
in favor of them going for – you so never know if, in hockey, dude. It, you never know.
However, at the same time, if it's a 2025 first, again, a better draft, what is viewed to be a better draft, I don't think it matters if you are trying to make the playoffs or not. I think you have to move Lawton at that point. I don't – You very rarely, and I think you said this before, but like you very rarely get the chance to like kind of right a wrong, like to kind of fix a mistake. Like you don't get a mulligan.
And this is the second time getting that
Lawton,
swing at
Lawton
it.
Is the second mulligan. And by the way, like there were some teams interested last year at the deadline.
Right.
So now, not for a first, but like still interesting. And then the whole offseason and then going.
I think like, it was a first last year. That's what
I'm
saying.
In the summer it was. I don't think at deadline last
mid-season.
Year it was.
Okay.
I think it was a second. But like the other thing is, are you happy to move Lawton for a second and a reclamation project like Owen Tippett became, right? Like where you say, hey, this guy is a change of scenery guy.
Yes.
I think so because, again, you know what Lawton's ceiling is. You know what his timeline is. You know what he's going to make, all these things. You have Poehling doing the same thing, right? And, again, you think that you're – if you really are trying to rebuild and scout elite talent and acquire elite talent, all that – at some point, you do have to make the uncomfortable decision. And Tortorella said it before. You can't fall in love with a guy coming up on the deadline. And I am a little bit worried that they have. We'll see. If the best they get offered is a second, and that's it for Lawton, they're not going to make that move.
No.
If they get offered a first and they turn it down,
I'd be pissed.
That I think, is where you say, the rebuild isn't really the rebuild. At that point, you say, like, yes, he is important. He is important if you're trying to make the playoffs. However, that first is probably far more important. I have to say this before I throw it back to you. Everything right now rides on Matvei Mishkov. Everything. Because of the way that you're going after it this year, everything right now lands on Mishkov. If he doesn't come over, or if he comes over and he isn't the guy that you think he's going to be, you're screwed.
Yeah.
There is no safety net. Gauthier, even though he was a bit of a diva, allegedly, like there was a thought that he maybe had elite skill at
stud.
Something, right?
He's a stud.
And so you don't have that now. Drysdale's a nice player, very good player for them so far. Injury issues, okay. But that is like the thing. This whole thing right now hinges on Mishkov. You need to figure out a way to get yourself up in the draft and go get that elite guy and pair him with Mishkov. And if you don't do it, you are going to potentially put yourself back in hockey purgatory, which they have been in for two decades. So that's my concern. That's where
that's fair. This,
it all comes from a good place.
Sure.
You know?
No, that's all fair. And yeah, I'm with you. I think Drysdale is probably a two. I don't think he's a stud number one D-man, but he's only 21 years old or so. I mean, right. The injuries are there. He's a good player. Don't get me wrong, but Cutter Gauthier is like leading NCAA in school. I still watch BC all the time because I do enjoy Boston College with or without him. And dude, it's like, come on, this kid's a stud. I think he's legit. But anyway, what I was going to say on the Scott Lawton thing is I'd go as far as saying if they were offered a first round pick and didn't do that deal, I would not be afraid to label that organizational malpractice. Like,
there we go.
A first round draft pick for Scott Laughton, and you're saying no? That's a problem. I mean, that's a problem. I don't care that he has a letter on his chest when Torts isn't willing to give out a seat. Like, I'm sorry. I need to get back a first round pick in return for Laughton if it's on the table. If you decline that, that would be organizational malpractice to me.
Yeah,
it would be.
I agree.
I like Danny.
We'll
and I
see.
Like June.
I mean, again, listen, I put them on notice on Tuesday. They went out and they made a Walker trade and they took on some salary and they got a few more picks just for retaining salary. They have one retention spot left. They can't just take on everybody's money this year. They have one retention spot left. They have about, 26 hours from now until tomorrow's deadline. That's good math. Podcast feed people are probably like, that's not 26. But if you were live here with the 1,300 plus people who are here live right now, not making that, it's right there. It's in the corner of the screen. I can see it. You guys can't, but I can. I'm going to put them on notice. You have until 3 o'clock tomorrow. Let's see what happens. I do think that at this point, they still have plenty of money. I don't believe they've had to move Ellis to LTIR yet. So they still have one last cap thing to play with.
Who?
Ryan Ellis. Yo, there was somebody yesterday, by the way, who tweeted at me. They're like, just hear me out here. All right. What if the Flyers are just going to keep some space so that next year they can bring back Ryan Ellis?
Dude, could you imagine?
Ryan Ellis. Dude, if Ryan Ellis, rises from the dead, I know it's Lent, all right? But, he's not the hockey messiah. You know what I mean?
Ryan,
I don't want to be sacrilege here, you know?
Dude,
but
that beard in
but
Nashville.
Ah, elite beard.
Elite
anyway,
beard.
So, just to recap, we did the Philly scoreboard, Jason Kelsey. We talked about parenting. We talked about Tobias Harris being a fraud.
Union.
The union. Oh, that's right. We got off on a union thing, and we did the Flyers. Now, I'm sure that there's somebody out there who wants us to talk about the Wings. We're not talking about the Wings today. We're not. Sorry. Apologies to the Wings.
Barry Manilow.
Barry Manilow came up, too. You're right.
Copa
this,
Cabana.
I think, was a good show. And
it
you know what's nice
show.
About it, Broads? We could always do it again.
That's right.
We did not get to Sting's last match, which means at some point, I'm going to get you over on It's Just Wrestling, everybody's 10th favorite pro wrestling podcast, available on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. It's got the teal and the pink logo. I'm going to get you on there. We're going to talk about Sting's last match and how AEW's kind of recaptured your imagination, because that's what this is all about. If you're a pro wrestling fan, you got WrestleMania coming to Philly. You got AEW bringing the feeling back. Mercedes Moné's going to show up next week. The former Sasha Banks. Big deal. All right. A lot to talk about over there. But in the meantime, we talked our Philly sports. And how do you take things to another level when you get to the end of this? You don't let the wind out of the sails, Broads. You keep it going. And this is where I say thank you to you. Oh. Where do the people follow you?
Oh, well, YouTube, Twitter, Broads Media. That's it.
I love it.
I wasn't prepared for that. Broads Media. Broads 81. Find me anywhere.
My brain went down two paths.
Yeah, okay.
The way that you don't take wind out of the sails is by following up a very strong first act. You can even say a strong second act. And now, Kregels, behind the glass, we're going to throw this to an interview that Kevin Kincaid did with Mike Garafolo. Do you know that man has over half a million followers on that Twitter.com, X.com?
Wow.
Local ties. They're going to get into the NFL offseason about Jason Kelsey, all kinds of great stuff. So once Craig has that pulled up, you and I are going to peace out. I'll be back on Monday. Craig, I don't know if you have the overlay. I could probably pull it up too. But Monday's show, keep an eye on social. Monday is the launch of North Carolina online sports betting. It's going to be probably the craziest day I've had with work since the Super Bowl, maybe even more so. There's a chance that it'll be a Tuesday show next week as well. All right? I'm going to probably tell you right now it'll be Tuesday. But keep an eye on social media and I'll let you people know. Kregels, do you have it ready? He's giving me the thumbs up. Broads, thanks for coming on the show. A big thank you to the over 1,300 people who joined us live. That's a nice number.
You're damn right it is.
Everybody have a great rest of your week. Have a great weekend. Here's Kinker and Mike Garafolo.
In the show, we got Mike Garafolo from the NFL Network. Local guy, LaSalle, WIP alumnus. Mike, how you doing, man? Thanks for coming on.
What's up, man? How's everything going? AK after Kelsey.
Yes, after Kelsey. This is franchise tag, transition tag week for you guys, I guess. Is this Are you guys busier now in the off season than you are during the season?
Yeah. People ask, what do you do in the off season? What do I do in the off season? I work harder. It's weird though, because it's a different flow. Like, you're in season, you're at stadiums, you've got a structure, whereas the off season can kind of happen at any moment. And, you're basically working mostly out of your house. We did just do the combine. We'll have the NFL league meeting, the spring meeting, coming up in a couple of weeks. That's down in Florida. You've got the draft, some pro days and stuff like that. So it's kind of intermittent, but it's a different kind of busy. But it's fun. I mean, I when I was covering the Giants for the Star Ledger back in 2000, the 04 season, 05 off season, they had me covering bowling. I was doing the U.S. Open bowling in North Brunswick, New Jersey, just a regular bowling. Like, that's where they hold the U.S. Open, at a regular bowling lane, because where else would you hold it? And so I covered that for a week because I had nothing to do. And now it's just not like that anymore, because back then there was only so much space in the paper. Now there's infinite space, so football is pretty much 365 anymore.
When you were covering...
Hold on, you got to see this guy. Hold on, you see this guy? See that guy right there? Did you get a good shot of him?
Yeah, what's he doing?
All right, that's Jalen Hurts, the dog walker. So there's this guy in town who walks dogs where I live, and he looks exactly like Jalen Hurts, to the point where I've done, like, multiple double takes. Like, why is Jalen Hurts walking dogs in my town in the offseason? Go ahead, sorry.
Now, is this Jalen Hurts with the goatee, or after he shaved?
Dude, he's like the spitting image of – and somebody showed me his Instagram with his hat off and the glasses off. But when he wears the glasses with the goatee, he's got an earring, which – does Jalen have an earring? I think he does.
Yeah,
he's got like a dangling – it's almost like he's trying to look like he's going as Jalen Hurts for Halloween. That's exactly what – and every time I see him, it gets me.
We'll have to track him down. We'll have to send Kyle Pagan out there to do like a man on the street or something with the Jalen Hurts lookalike. When you were covering bowling for the Star Ledger, did you ever run into Pete Weber? Dude, who do you think you are? I am.
So the week that I just told this story the other day, and it's coming up again. The week that I covered the U.S. Open, I'm like, you know what? Just please make it an uneventful week. I don't want to have to do anything. And again, I'm going to tell the story, and it's going to make me sound horrible. I'm like, let's just get in and out, cover the event, move on, go back to covering football at some point or do whatever. Dick Weber dies on the first day of the U.S. Open. And I'm like, you got it. Now I got to write an obit about a sport I know nothing about. Like, I know this guy's a legend, but I don't know anything about him. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Pete then withdrew from the event. So I didn't get a chance to do it. And part of the, you know, at the time it was kind of like WWE was getting into that, like, how edgy can we be to kind of attract people? And bowling was sort of following the same type of thing. So one of the stories they wanted me to write was how bowling has become more edgy, not your dad's bowling, which was Dick Weber. So it all kind of lined up, and I'm like, I really don't have the perspective. So I told this to somebody, like, really sorry that Dick Weber died and inconvenienced your week. We're sorry that that happened. So yeah, I never got the chance to talk to Pete that week.
Well, today I learned that bowling had a WWF Attitude Era or something close to an ECW Paul Heyman kind of one night stand kind of vibe. I may read about that after we're done doing this segment here. But yeah, man, you know, it's funny because we brought back this show like a year and a half ago, and I like a couple weeks ago I went back and I wrote down a list of all the guests that we've had on over then. I had like 75 guests or whatever, and then I write like another list of like people we want to get on. I'm like, why haven't I had Garofalo on before? Because you're a local guy, man. I mean, you're from Philly. You went to LaSalle.
Yeah.
WIP background and everything. I mean, just for people who don't know, like, what was your path to NFL Network?
I was in LaSalle, and, you know, junior year, you start to really focus on what internships can I get to kind of lead me in the right direction. And my father was like, just check the board in the communication center and see if there's any job listings for anything. I was like, all right, sure, I'll check it. And sure enough, there was WIP was advertising for they called us producers, but we weren't allowed to have any input on the show content at the time. So we're basically engineers, board ops, whatever you want to call it. Yeah. And I was like, well, why don't I just try to get a real job instead of doing an internship and filing papers and getting coffee and all that stuff? And it was great advice by him. I was working the last half of my junior year. My first shift was midnight 2000 into 2001, and at midnight there was no host. Lucy Jones, remember Lucy Jones? I think Lucy Jones was doing up till midnight, and then she was done. So at midnight I had to hit a reel, and it was on tape, whatever it was. And so I hit it, And the fireworks at Penn's Landing went off as soon as I hit it. So I hit the button and I hear boom, 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 boom. I'm like, I just blew up the place. And I'm thinking like, oh my God, it's Y2K a year later. Like they screwed up on the regular Y2K, but this is really when it was. And I was like, what the hell? Like the station's going to blow up. It was just the fireworks at Penn's Landing. So yeah, I worked the last half of my junior year, all of my senior year, graduated, was working there. And I remember I was sitting there and Don McKee was doing a show on a Sunday in the summer, dead, you know, Phillies were okay at the time, I think. But baseball didn't really drive WIP by design. They wanted to be all football all the time. And so I'm sitting there and it's just like, there's nothing going on. I'm staring through the glass at Don trying to get through 4 hours of radio, which he did every time. Good for him. And I'm like, well, do I really want to do this? And I was like, if I want to do this, the people they put on the air are writers anyway. So somebody said, well, get with this guy, Rob Motti, who used to be a producer here. He's now the AP sports editor in Philadelphia. Hit him up and see what you get. So I hit him up and I was just like, hey, you know, Dick Girardi, a bunch of guys here suggested I get in touch with you. And he's like, yeah, come on out to Eagles day one of training camp and we'll talk. So I drove all the way up to Lehigh. I meet him there. We start talking. Turns out he's not only from my neighborhood, he went to my high school. And then we found out that his brother was friends with my neighbor, who I would go into his house. He was older and his friends were older. But I would go into his house to watch a lot of games because my dad wouldn't pay for Prism, just refused to pay for the premium channels. And so I'd watch the games in there. And he's like, oh, my, your neighbor is Mike Mulvihill. Mike, rest in peace. Love that guy. He's like, yeah, yeah. So he really took me under his wing. So for 2 years, I did that. Interviewed with the Philly Daily News in 03. And at the end of it, Pat McClune, the sports editor, was like, yeah, we haven't had a job opening since 1994. And it was 2003. Back then, you would get a newspaper job and you would keep a newspaper.
And you would not leave the newspaper.
You would not leave the newspaper. Yeah. He's like, so I really don't have anything. I was like, oh, great. That was a waste of an hour. And it wasn't, because Pat was the one that recommended me. And he's a great guy. I love Pat McClune. Recommended me for the Star-Ledger job. Went up there, covered the Giants for 9 years, two Super Bowls. And then I don't think they've won a playoff game since I got off the beat. So
No. It's funny because you got into WIP at the wrong time. Well, that was a springboard, of course. But now the producers are part of the show. They're like the third microphone. They can get on there whenever they want. You can go straight from being a board op to being a producer to being a PM drive host if you want, you know?
God bless. And more power to those guys. And I know they're hustling and girls. But Tom Bigby just would not let the producer, and he's since passed away, so RIP to Tom Bigby. And he if he found out that like we had any input or anything like that, he would kind of put his foot down. He didn't want the producer to have it. So we would have to, I'd have an idea and I would give it to Anthony or Steve Martorano, who I did mostly their show at the time. And then they would have to, you know, kind of do it or take it to him. And he'd be, I love that idea, whatever. So we'd have to kind of backdoor it that way. Yeah. But the beauty of it was, he also at the same time, Bigby would call me if a caller went to like 201 or 202, is 2 minutes was the time limit.
Yeah.
Cut this guy off. And I'm like, Howard's talking to him at the Eskin show. Howard is like, what do you, he makes a lot more money than me. Like, what do you want me to say to him to, you know? So, you know, it was the yin and the yang with Tom.
But wait, did Bigby have, I heard that Bigby had the ability to kind of cut it off himself. So I always pictured him as being like the James Bond villain who's sitting at the fancy desk and he's got like a thing under his desk that he presses where the call just, so why would he call you if he had the power to do that? Just to complain. I mean,
he was a very interesting, complicated man. And working for him was equal parts informative, educational, interesting, and aggravating. You know, he one time a guy said turd on the air and I didn't dump it. And they were on remote. So he calls me and he's like, that man just said turd. And I was like, yeah. And he goes, can I curse on this, by the way?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. He goes, a turd is a piece of shit. And I was like, I know what a turd is, Tom. And he goes, then why didn't you bleep it? I said, because he didn't say shit. It's a turd. And he goes, do you know the seven dirty words? And I rattled off the seven dirty words. I'll spare you that, right? I was just, because that was the Carlin skit was
well, it reminds me of the scene from Billy Madison where they put the flaming bag on the guy's doorstep. He's like, he called the shit poop. He
called the shit poop. Poop again. So I rattled off the seven dirty words, and for the only time I've ever had to interact, he was dead silent for like a second.
Yeah.
And he goes, give me Neil Newman's number. Neil was the guy underneath Tom at the time. And so I said, listen, he didn't. And Neil comes in the next day. He's like, just, you know, I said, but the memo that we had that went out like the week before, because they were really a stickler for this. I said, it didn't say the seven dirty words or any form of the seven dirty. It said the seven dirty words, and turd was not on the list. So I felt like it should just sneak through.
A technicality. I would agree with that if I could go back in time and be there at that point. It's interesting because I mean, media has changed so much over the years, especially since those times. You've got bloggers sitting next to Inquirer writers in the press boxes. You've got players that have their own podcasts, people breaking their own, Pat Beverly breaking his own trade news or whatever. I'm just curious to what you think of the scene these days and how that affects you as an insider and your guys' jobs with the network.
Yeah, I mean, it the whole thing that it's not reporting anymore, right? Like, insidering is not it's not journalism. There are journalists out there. That's why, like, when Real Sports went off the air a couple of months ago, like, that hurt. Because that was one of the last bastions of real, true, we're going to ask tough questions and we're not basically angling for access type stuff.
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot of that anymore. So, you know, I don't know if I ever was really, truly cut out for that kind of, I would do that to a certain extent when I was, you know, writing, but I never felt like that was my strongest suit. And I don't think that insidering, I like to call it insidering, I don't think that insidering is either. I think it's just more like, my thing is, I like to have a fuller picture of things. And if we're on the air talking about this stuff, not make it just transactional and try to provide you the context and the understanding for what's going on here.
Yeah.
And that comes with time, right? Like, getting thrown on a beat back in 2004, not even for the Eagles. Like, if it was the Eagles, it would have been a much easier transition for me. Now, thankfully, it was in the NFC East, and the team wasn't completely foreign to me. But to sort of try to have the full context of what's happening there, it's tough to do. And it's what we do in any branch of the media. What we do, you know, you don't get those training wheels privately, right? You're out there, and what you're doing, people are seeing from the jump and formulating opinions on you that may never change based on what they saw on your first week on the job. So, the old man in me, the old grumpy, you know, back in my day, old man in me would say, it used to be the paper was the first thing in the morning that would hit, and you'd wake up and you knew who won the day before. And you knew who lost the day before. And it was a terrible feeling to kind of, oh, crap, I got to. Now, the feeling for these guys these days is that alert that's going to come across.
Push notification that's going to ruin it for me when I haven't watched.
The empty feeling that I used to feel in the morning, getting all the papers and going through them, who's got what and all this stuff. So there's really none of that, but it's instantaneous now and it changes things. And it's not like it used to be and you know. That is a really long conversation we can get into, but
no, it's just fascinating. I mean, you know what Crossing Broad is. You know what our brand is. Yeah. We've always kind of dived. We like to dive. We've dived into those things over the years because I think it's fascinating. Two things, Craig. If you have those links, you can pull up the one. The two things that you actually shared this year, this Eagles season, that we maybe should owe you royalties for. We're not like typical insider stuff, but like for example, the one about the Seahawks practice squad player bumping to AJ Brown. And this was coming off the heels of the Big Dom thing. So everybody was very annoyed. But this is a great piece of information. So you go on and you say, if you were wondering why a non-player on the Seahawks sideline didn't get the Dom DeSandro treatment for getting into it, the Eagles player, it's because he's actually a player. He's just a practice squad guy, you know, which is fascinating to me because I just, you know, everybody's trying to compare these situations and look for parallels or whatever.
And
I was like,
and he got fined for it, which the fine is very minimal for a practice squad player. But he did get, but he wasn't booted off the sideline. So I mean, that's the kind of stuff I like doing. It's like the hold on, I was just about to tell you what the other one was, but I think if I'm not mistaken, I know what you're. Go ahead, bring it up.
Yeah. No, the other one was with Matt Leo fell out of his underwear. And Pagan was really, I think Pagan was kind of disappointed on this one because he was really hoping that this was a red thong, and it just turned out to be like a white. I guess the pattern of white there is like, I don't know, he looks like a carnival guy or something. But yeah, from the hard-hitting journalism department, Eagles defensive football operations assistant Matt Leo notes, he, on Instagram, he was not wearing a thong yesterday, but it's a lucky pair of underwear. So we laugh at it. This isn't typical like insider, like, you know, I'm hearing that you know, Brandon Graham is coming back on a 1-year deal or whatever. But yeah, this is like stuff that, like, this is like interesting information that we wouldn't have known like otherwise or whatever. So it's really just, you know, what did you call it? Insidering, just information.
Insidering. That's not even insidering. And honestly, I will give credit to Kevin Whitmer, who was one of the editors at the Star Ledger when I was there. And he said, because I was Mr. Nuts and Bolts, and that's what our sports department, our editors there, you know, we need transactional stuff. We need to break stuff ahead of everybody. And I was kind of like, yes, like 23-year-old nose to the grindstone. That's what I'm going to get you. And Kevin actually one day was like, hey, just don't forget, like, the other stuff that registers with people. Like, what music is playing in the locker room? And I was like, oh, okay, like that. And equipment stuff, like my biggest scoop. Not my biggest scoop. My first year on the beat, I got really like fortunate. It was hard work, but also fortunate. I kind of fell ass backwards into some stuff from time to time. And then one day I'm talking to an agent of a player, and he goes, so the Giants are going to wear red jerseys coming up. I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, yeah, they're wearing red jerseys. They're going to debut them coming up. And I was like, I didn't hear about that. Let me check to see if they've announced that or whatever. And so about to be in a scoop, like they're going to wear these alternate red jerseys, which they actually wore against the Eagles and the Cowboys, and I think they were like 1-4, and they just buried those things, and they never saw the light of day again. But I remember, like, my sports editor in the sports section was fired up about that, and the fans went nuts about it. I was like, oh, equipment and uniforms and that kind of stuff, that registers, and it's still to this day registers big time with people. So
it does. You know,
yeah, what people are talking about and the ancillary stuff surrounding the game that's interesting, or you may have seen what happened. Like, yeah, I try to have my antenna up for that stuff. And then sometimes when I miss it, I get mad at myself. It's like, dude, don't forget what Whitmer told you years ago.
Yeah, I mean, you're always going to have nuts and bolts, you know. But, I mean, you know what the Crossing Broad brand has always been. It's been everything but the game, really. I mean, that should be like our unofficial, like, hashtag if we don't have one now.
There you go. You just came up with your slogan.
yeah everything but the game. Yeah, but that makes it seem like we don't give a shit about wins and losses, which you know, sometimes it's true. It depends on how many players are available for the Sixers or not. But case in point, we had our best two traffic years ever in 2023 and 2022, and that was on the strength of the Phillies. But it wasn't about anything that happened on the field. It was all the other shit. It was like dancing on my own. It's like Dick down in Dallas is playing in the locker room. And that's the stuff, like, or like, you know, Nick Castellanos is now down 2-3 buttons instead of 2 or something.
Yeah.
It was all the like ancillary stuff because fans just kind of, I don't know, like it connects them to the players or whatever. You know, everybody's doing like the box score and DeAndre Swift ran for 57 yards and should have got more touches or whatever the complaint of the day is, you know, but and that stuff will always be there. But all those other unexplored kind of things, they always land, you know.
And that's why this past year with the NFL, with the Taylor Swift thing, you know, at first I'm rolling my eyes, and you know, on our show, the Insiders, Tom Pelissero, Ian Rappaport, and I were like, we're not even going to mention her. Like, we're going to make like veiled references to her, and kind of like that was our shtick. Mm. Like, we're ignoring this, and then at some point you go, why would, like, embrace it? This is what people are into, and sometimes in a negative way, right? Like, it's registering with them, like it gets them. So it's just stuff that fuels the whole thing. And now my daughters, honestly, at the beginning of the season, I don't know that they heard of Taylor Swift, and they are absolute maniacs now. I don't know what, like, maybe somebody in school, I don't know, even know how it happened. But we went to a Taylor Swift cover band concert the other day. They had a Taylor Swift dance party and all this stuff. And so now when she sees me, I'm watching the combine the other day, watching the drills. Oh, is Taylor there? It's like, no, she's not at the scouting combine, Carmen. She's not showing up in Indianapolis for that one. But, every time she sees it, she's engaged by it. So, you know what? Lean into it.
It opened the door, you know, to a new demographic and women and whatnot. Did you guys have editorial, like, freedom to discuss the Taylor stuff? Or did you kind of come up with your own rules on how you were going to mention her or talk about her on TV or on the website?
Yeah, no, we were told, you know, it's part of what's happening in the league this year. Yeah. Lean into it. If you've got information, great. Like, early on, it was, is she going to be at the game? And then it turned out she was at every game, so you didn't even have to report on that at some point.
Yeah.
And then Super Bowl Sunday, Ian was like, you got to help me get Taylor has arrived in, where the hell was the game? Vegas. I already forgot what Super Bowl was. Taylor has arrived in Vegas. And I was like, all right, let's see what I can do. Fired off a couple of texts. Finally got one back, like, boom, she's here. She's landed. I was like, go ahead, go crazy. And he puts, and his, the engagement on it was out of control, right? And it was, we knew she was coming. We knew her flight from Tokyo had landed in Los Angeles. So we knew it was imminent. It wasn't journalism in any sense of the word.
Yeah.
But he wanted to put it out there. He put it out there and people went bananas. And it's like, okay, this was the cherry on top of the, the Taylor Swift Sunday that wasn't.
As you said, insidering is not journalism and blogging is not journalism either. And like my philosophy has always been like to take the retail side of it and say the customer is always right. You know, people may look at like our 400th post about Ben Simmons or whatever. They may be sick of the Ben Simmons shit, but I'm like, people are interested in this, man. People are reading about it. So, I,
but don't you? Yeah, don't you love the "who cares" reply?
Who cares?
Who cares? Yeah. Enough people that we're going to continue to do this because it's ringing the bell. That's who
I feel like saying to him, brother. Like, I respect. I thank you for your reading the site. I respect everything you have to say. The only thing I give a shit is about is what Google Analytics is telling me on this other monitor that I'm pointing to over here, because that's really the only, you know. Yes, we play a role in shaping what people see and don't see. But they tell us by their actions what they want to read and what they don't want to read. And we're not the Athletic, right? I mean, like, if you want great journalism, go there or go to NFL.com or go to, like, Peter King or any number of these people who are doing this.
Yeah. But,
some things are journalism. Some things are not. Some things are whatever. It's funny. I wanted to ask you, this is kind of a hard turn in television. When I was a television producer, we would never do this. So we'd never go from, like light story to hard story.
Yeah.
But we're on the topic of, like, editorial decision-making and all that stuff. When Jason Kelce retired on Monday, your tweet said something like an announcement on Jason Kelce's future is coming up at 1 o'clock or whatever here. Some people said versions of that, you know, various insiders, reporters. Other people came out and said straight up he's retiring. He's about to come up and announce his retirement here. I got like it was interesting to read the replies to that because some people were like felt like it was wrong for reporters to say that, to let Kelce have his moment and do it that way. I'm just curious as to like what your philosophy was on approaching that.
The answer is it's the same thing. I hate to equate this. It's sort of the same thing on deaths, right? Like how do you like sources say this guy has died? Sources say this guy is going to retire. They're not the same. Please do not grab that and make it seem like I just equated retirements with deaths.
Sure.
But not you, anybody else out there. Yeah. But it's you know what the answer is. Journalistically, the answer on both of the on anything is you go. You've got it. It's confirmed. You know it's right. You go. Then you get into insidering versus reporting, right? And also, and it's so weird because you're never. You're not rooting for the team, right? And I people all the time, like, how did you cover the Giants while you were an Eagles fan? I was like, I stopped being an Eagles fan when I covered the Eagles. Like, I just, for me to do my job the way I needed to do it, I can't be in there. And it's just, it happened, right? Like, I remember a friend of mine was working for the team, like an intern, a PR intern or something like that. And I saw her in the press box when they were losing to the Panthers. And I said, what's up with you? What's wrong with you? And she's like, pointed to the TV because they were losing. I was like, oh, okay. I was like, wow, that didn't even register with me. Like that really, the switch has been flipped. So anyway, back to the point at hand, which is I've known Jason Kelce for quite some time. I've got immense respect for him. I don't consider him a friend, but I've covered him and talked to him enough closely, and I'm sure we'll have interaction going forward. And you respect what he did on the field and off the field. Mm-hmm. And it's like, should he have that moment? Now, go back to the morning after the Tampa Bay game. I woke up to texts from people that were like, hey, Fletcher Cox and Jason Kelce both indicated after the game that that's going to be it for them, right?
Yeah.
And by the time I was like processing that, Schefter had tweeted out the Kelce thing.
Right.
And so our people, because Good Morning Football is on the air, were like, hey, you see this story? I'm like, yeah, it's true. I guess I got it. So I then had my own tweet. I was like, it's out there now, right? I had my own tweet after that of, you know, he indicated, I forget, since that day, I've gotten the phrasing on what he said, and it was really not as all the way there as we made it seem.
Sure.
Sounded like Fletcher Cox was more definitive in what he said. Yeah. But anyway, I don't know what I would have done if I had had the time to kind of process it that morning and Adam didn't put it out and it was going to be on me as to whether I would have put it out. It's a tough call, man. It really
but you
is.
Know, you're right though, man. I mean, these are the longer I've been in the business, the more I realize that a lot of these things are just judgment calls. And there's no handbook really for it. And like I go last week or 2 weeks ago, I'm at Westchester University speaking to the students or whatever, you know, and it's like, I don't really know what to tell you. I mean, you could try this path. You could try this, but this is like a nonlinear industry. It's not like you do A and then you do B and then you do C and then you're a doctor. You know, it doesn't work like that. I mean, some people may report on this. Some people may not report on that. Crossing Broad has those kinds of, we make those calls every single day with stuff that we have, you know? I don't know. Everybody's got to make their own like decision in a vacuum and based on what their outlet or what their editors think or whatever. And I don't know. That's just a long-winded way of me saying, I don't know if there's a right or wrong
way. Journalistically, there's a right way. I wouldn't even use the word ethically. I've had people say that before. Well, ethically, when I took the Rodgers video, Aaron Rodgers is getting carted after he tears his Achilles and he's getting carted out and I'm taking the video of the car going by, and the security guy comes up to me. What are you doing? Can't take that video. I said, what do you mean I can't take that video? He goes, well, you can, but let me ask you a question. Ethically, can I was like, ethically, yes, I can. Like, that's not, you're using the wrong word there, right? Yeah. And really, honestly, the right answer to that was technically, ESPN owns all, holy crap, that was fast. Technically, ESPN owns all that footage there, right there, because they're brought. There's the guy. That wasn't even the guy. There was another guy that came.
Oh, there's another guy.
That guy was trying to stand in the way, which I was moving the camera around his head. Like, come on, dude. But his boss then came over and said something, and he was cool about it. Like, in the end, we had a good conversation. But it's funny because he said, "Are you allowed to do that?" I said, "Well, that's the Jets PR guy right there, who was mostly concerned about is our quarterback's Achilles torn to shreds at that time." And I was just like, "You can ask him." He looked at us. And he just kept walking. I was like, well, there's our answer. And then ESPN had their camera guy right in his face. And they put it on. I was like, well, if they put it on the broadcast, let me fire or whatever. So, ethically, you know, it's retirements are a tricky one.
It's a lot of gray. There's not a lot. Like most things these days, there's not a lot of black and white. There's a lot of gray. All right. Last one for you. The Jason Kelce retirement. I think the thing that jumped out to me the most about it was that I just love how he is able to succinctly describe something that I've been trying to explain to people about Philadelphia and playing here and the fan and media relationship. I've been trying to explain this for years, where I don't think it's that hard to play in Philadelphia. I think it's an exercise in reciprocity. You put in the effort, you put in the time, you're going to get that appreciation and, you know, admiration back, right? It's a very simple concept. Maybe it's hard to execute, but I appreciate him just boiling that down to very simple terms and hearing somebody who gets it explain that, you know what I'm saying? And it just, that was the part I think that stood out to me, was just like being able to take something that people think is complicated and say,
yeah,
I mean, it's really not that complicated.
But I disagree with you and I disagree with him. It's harder than he makes it look, right? Now, first of all, you got to be really talented, right? You can't suck. You suck, it's not going to work, right? That's true. You know, also not going to be here long enough. You've got to improve. You've got to be incredibly patient, right? Because the minute you fire back at a fan base or whatever, like, you're done for, okay? And you've got to have that longevity and consistency of character in who you are and what you do. Like, it's got to be somewhere deep inside and ingrained of you. And look, I mean, if Ben Simmons had woke up one day and been like, hey, you know what? Time to give some effort. My bad, fans, all that stuff. Like, there's no question it could have been better from there on out, but that's just not who he is. So Kelce's got that innate emotional intelligence. Did I just bring Jeffrey Lurie's phrase?
But it's true. But it's very true.
Yeah. And he's got that inside of him. So, like, you can give me the blueprint to the house.
Yeah.
But I can't build it, right? Not part of my skill set. So I understand what he's saying.
Yeah.
I get it. That is the blueprint. If you've got that ability inside of you and you listen to him, you can make it happen. But the way that he did it consistently from start to finish, a tip of the backwards hat, which, by the way, is my leadership now going to be questioned because I had a backwards hat. The reason I'm doing this, by the way, is I had it on before we started, and I was like, oh, if I take it off, I'm going to have that red, that mark on there. So I just decided to go with it.
Yeah. Oh, it's all good. It's all good. I'll let you go. You got? Are you getting the golf club fitting today?
I do. Yeah, I'm getting fitted for new clubs, which I actually did at the end of last season. And then didn't buy the clubs. I went to one place. I'm going to go to another place now. I didn't like the first place. The guy gave me an appointment time. I screwed up. It was like 10 o'clock, and I showed up at 10:30. I thought he said 10:30. And he was like, well, it's only going to be a half hour now. I was like, dude, come on. He's like, I got somebody in. I was like, can we do another day? And he's like, well, yeah, but I'm going to have to charge you for this one. So from the jump, I didn't like that experience. And so now I'm going to go to a different place, try it out, buy some sticks. They're going to cost way too much, and maybe shave a stroke off my game, you know.
Maybe I said so real quick. I took my dad to a golf simulator for his 74th birthday last week. You can play St. Andrews now. You only have to go to Conshohocken to do it. And it's funny because the mat or the screen or whatever you hit it is only like 10 yards in front of you, right? And so I'm just crushing like this 4-iron. I'm like, man, that felt like a great shot. Everything feels like a great shot because it stops 10 yards away, whatever. And then there's like a little pause, and then it goes. You know, and it just like dips into the ground 100 yards. And I'm like, man, this shit is pretty good. They got this. They got my shot down to a tee.
So we trust it. Like, we believe that what they're showing us is what's actually. How do we know? How do we know that this racket? Like, there's just no way to prove it because every time you hit one of those shots, it never goes where it's going to go. Like, it just there's no way to test it.
It was scarily accurate, though. I felt like I was out on my local course. So, all right, we'll have fun with that, man. Listen, I appreciate the time. It was great having you on. Mike Garofalo, everybody from NFL Network. You know where to find him. If you don't know where to find him, then you're
more. More Pagan man on the streets, please. I hope when I attend a Phillies game this year, he's doing one of them, and I get to say something crazy into the microphone on one of his men on the street.
We will. We'll get it. We'll get him out there. We'll have to get you guys introduced at some point. But thanks, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for the time.
You got it, guys. Thank you.
And that's Mike Garofalo. A nice interview there with Kinker. A big thank you to everybody who tuned in today. We wrapped up here over 1,500 people all live across Crossing Broad, YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. That is a hell of a number. Let's see if we can do it again next week. Again, keep your eyes on social media. We'll definitely be having two shows next week, probably Tuesday, Thursday again. I know I made the promise Monday, Thursday, but it's probably going to end up being Tuesday, Thursday. Keep an eye out. We'll have more for you. Next week, we'll see what comes of Philly sports over this weekend. Hopefully, we get some good stuff to talk about next week. A big thank you to everybody who tuned in. Spread the word if you haven't done so already. Over on YouTube, make sure you like the video, share the video, subscribe, ring the bell so you're notified whenever we go live with any shows, Crossing Broadcast, Crossed Up, Pagan's Man on the Street videos that Garofalo was just talking about, and on Monday/Tuesday's show. Don't forget, you can always leave a message with your thoughts on the biggest stories in Philly sports, 215-839-8477, and I'll bring them up on the show on either Monday or Tuesday. Again, keep your eyes peeled, and we'll talk about it next week. A big thank you to all of you. Don't forget, podcast feed as well, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Russ. That was Kinker. Mike Garofalo, big thank you to him for coming on. Big thank you to Broads, who led off the show. We'll talk to you again next week here on Crossing Broadcast.